swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied.
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 153. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Subscribe and rate 5 stars. Apple, Spotify, Odyssey, all those places. Check us out on YouTube. On the WEEI page, we got a Play Tessie playlist there. You can find all our episodes. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. We really appreciate it. And on the socials, on Twitter and Instagram, at Play Tessie on both of those. It's Gordo here with Sammy. Pat's not here for this one. But the big news heading into this episode is that Nick Pivetta has declined the qualifying offer. So what does that mean for those who aren't familiar? It means that the Red Sox offered Nick Pivetta a $21 million offer, and Pivetta could either take the $21 million for the year, and he's back with the Red Sox, or he could decline it, but then the team that signs him has to give the red or has to sacrifice a draft pick depending on where they are with their payroll. But the Red Sox now will get a draft pick after the second round when a new team signs Nick Pivetta. I think it's all but a certainty that Nick Pivetta will move on from the Red Sox. He is not going to be back in Boston next year. The Red Sox will get that draft pick. And I got to tell you, I was wrong. I was wrong about Nick Pivetta and this qualifying offer. I thought when they offered it, that he would absolutely take it. I thought it was crazy. Going into it, Sammy, we had an episode like the day of or the day before it, and I was preaching, give it to Tyler O'Neill, and you're okay if he takes it. And if he declines it, you get the pick. Whereas Nick Pivetta, if he takes it, it really hamstrings you a little bit. But to Craig Breslow's credit, he read the market perfectly. The Red Sox knew, I think they knew that Nick Pivetta was going to decline this. I wish I knew what their plan would be for if he accepted it, but it doesn't matter at this point because he declined it. They've now got an extra draft pick to work with this offseason. If you were comfortable with them losing one draft pick losing their second round pick, now they can sign two qualifying offer free agents and still be in that spot, or they could just sign one and you're even out draft pick wise. They would still lose some international spending money, which is basically like the money that they use to like sign teenagers from the islands. You know, it's how they got Devers, Bayo, Rafael, etc. So that's still a thing. But pick wise, you'd come out even if they just signed one. It's a good day for the Red Sox. It is a win for Craig Breslow. I'm impressed. I don't think anyone saw the market playing out like this. So can do nothing but tip my hat to Craig Breslow and the Red Sox on this.
Yeah, same here. I'm a little bit mad at myself for not seeing this coming. Hindsight's 20/20. You kind of look at it now and, you know, to me, I'm kind of thinking, how did we not see this coming? When we were speaking about who we would give the qualifying offer to, our episode was all about Tyler O'Neill. When we recorded an episode on this topic, we were only talking about O'Neill because we figured Pivetta would be so obviously a no, and everyone had that take. Everyone had the same take on this, that of course you're not going to offer Pivetta a qualifying offer. $21 million, he's going to take it. But then you look at the landscape of this market, and I say this all the time, that we are surprised by the price of pitchers every offseason when it comes to money and every trade deadline when it comes to assets. And still, I'll speak for myself, I fell for it again. This is a great move by Craig Breslow. It's a small win, a good way to start the offseason. And you got to give the guy credit. He read the market. It seems like nobody else in this Red Sox bubble did. But it's good that the guy that's in charge is the one who figured it out. And feeling good. Good start to the offseason.
Yeah. To your point of being mad at yourself, I'm also mad at myself. Because I remember reading, oh, the Astros really liked Nick Pivetta at the deadline. Like the Astros and the Rays, like teams really like Nick Pivetta's stuff. Like we've known that for a long time. How I still am surprised he didn't take it. But I'm also a little annoyed at myself for not at least acknowledging the possibility that he could get it before it happened.
Why are you surprised that he didn't take it?
I mean, Sammy, we've watched this guy for years. He's a fine pitcher. No one's going to, like, he can eat innings, but yeah, we see him in stretches, but the numbers always end up the same. He's always in the fours. I get that, like, the potential's always been there, but usually guys, by the time they hit Nick Pivetta's age, it's like, all right, we've seen it. Like, we've seen it.
Yeah. So when I heard they offered Pivetta the qualifying offer, I was fully fence riding. I had no clue. I didn't have a take one way or the other, whether he'd take it or not. But we'll say, like, within the last week, we started hearing rumblings that he's not going to take it. And it just makes so much sense. He's going to make – guys are going to be fine losing a draft pick for a starting pitcher who logs innings like him. And, of course, people roll their eyes. The stuff plus, it's a thing. GMs care about it. Teams care about stuff. So, yeah, frustrating.
It just rolled off your tongue. But can you imagine if your team gave up like $50-60 million and a draft pick or maybe even two draft picks if you're a tax paying team to get Nick Pivetta? Dude, oh my God. If the Red Sox did that for a guy with Nick Pivetta's career arc, oh my God. Cause I don't think Seth Lugo got the qualifying offer last year. And the Royals contract that they gave him is probably what Pivetta's going to be in line for.
Yeah. I think he's going to get paid fairly well. He's going to make a lot more than $21 million, not average annual value, but overall he's going to probably get like $45 million.
Yeah, something like that. And the reason I brought up Seth Lugo is because last year when those rumors of Seth Lugo to the Red Sox were being floated, people were pissed and he didn't even have a draft pick attached to him. So
that's another one I got wrong. I did not want Seth Lugo at all. And then even throughout the 2024 season, I kept putting him on fraud watch, and then he finishes third in the Cy Young probably.
Crazy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's true with pitchers more so than any other position, probably in sports, where, you know, teams can see shit and they work with the guy and the guy changes his career, or it can go the other way around too. A guy leaves a team and his career falls apart. But I feel like more so than any other sport, you see guys who have pretty pedestrian careers or at times bad careers, and they get into a new situation, learn a new pitch, add a couple miles an hour on a fastball, doing some sort of whatever they do with weighted balls or whatnot, and they change their careers. And there's going to be a team out there that thinks they can do that with Nick Pivetta. I'm curious to see what team thinks it's worth the gamble that it's going to take, because like you said, Sammy, now that Pivetta's declined this qualifying offer, like, it's going to have to be in around the $40-50 million range, because if he was going to get like a 2-year, $35 million deal or something, he probably would have just taken the qualifying offer.
All right, I got a question for you on Pivetta. Now that we are, we'll call it 99% sure that he is not coming back to the Red Sox, how are you going to remember him?
I wish I could say that I would remember that I'm going to remember him for the postseason heroics in 2021. I wish I was at the game where he came out of the bullpen against the Rays and was absolute flames and won them that game before Vasquez hit the walk-off. But I got to tell you, the truthful answer is it's going to be the inconsistencies. It's going to be watching a guy who, for the first part of the season, is pitching so poorly that he has to get relegated to the bullpen. And then the second that happens, he pitches like one of the best pitchers in baseball for the rest of the season. And then this past year, it wasn't quite as much of a 50-50 split, but it's a guy that we would see strike out 10 guys in a row and, you know, look like fucking Jacob DeGrom for half a game or even a full game at times. And then the next start, he comes out there, lets up 4 home runs. And it's like, what the fuck, man? Like, we need to be able to count on our guys. And I appreciate that he 8 innings, but yeah, it's going to be the inconsistencies for me. I wish I could remember him in a better light, but it's just that every time he went out there, I didn't know what we were going to get. And that was what was the feeling in my head and in my heart when he stepped onto the mound. So that's just going to be the way it is. What about you?
For me, it's he was a frustrating guy just to watch. I remember talking to my friend about Nick Pivetta in the middle of the 2024 season and just saying, I don't enjoy watching him pitch. It's so frustrating to watch because he has everything it takes to be a very good major league pitcher. And I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher. He was fine. but we expected more than that. A good fastball, a hammer curveball, and then he's got a cutter, a changeup. I think he's got a slider too now. The whirly bird. How dare I forget the whirly bird.
Come on, Sammy. The fucking whirly bird. Come on.
The whirly bird. He's got all the tools, and he just never really put it together for an extended period of time. You look back to that first series of 2024 with Seattle and then the second series with Oakland. He looked unbelievable. And we're here thinking, okay, this is it. He's with a new pitching coach, a new run prevention unit is what it's called now. Maybe this is the breakout season, but then the same old, you know, pitfalls would come. Inconsistency. He starts walking guys. And that's another thing. Where does the inconsistency come from? You see him pitch just to the naked eye. His delivery is so repeatable. He's got the perfect build for a starting pitcher. Tall, broad guy, repeatable delivery. It's just impossible to pinpoint what is going wrong. The Red Sox gave him plenty of time to work on it. It's just not going to happen in Boston. It's not to say it's going to happen elsewhere. Maybe he'll have the same issues in Houston, Tampa, Dodgers, wherever he goes. But yeah, that's how I'm going to remember him. Just frustrating to watch. All the tools to succeed, just never really put it together fully.
Yeah. I by the way, since you mentioned like Houston, I do fully expect that Nick Pivetta is going to figure it out, and it's going to royally piss me off that they were never able to figure it out here if he does. But that said, I mean, they could have taken the chance, and honestly, they still could. We're talking like he's gone. He's not gone. Like, he hasn't signed anywhere.
But he's almost certainly gone. He's going to go to Tampa and start throwing submarine style and just be unbelievable, something like that.
I'll tell you, it's going to piss me off, but the thing we keep coming back to is the Red Sox just need certainty atop the rotation. And they've had the last two or three years where, you know, with the roster that they had the flexibility and the kind of the need to take shots on guys who maybe could become top of the rotation starters. You're not going to have to pay them like that, but maybe they could become that. And so they took that shot with Nick Pivetta a few times, but now we're at the point where you can't really be taking those shots anymore. I'm glad that this looks like it's trending toward in the direction of them aiming for a top of the rotation starter to replace Pivetta. But we'll see, man. But we've got a response. Pat is not able to be at this podcast, but he did send us his take on Nick Pivetta. Do I have that right?
Yes, he sent it via carrier pigeon.
Okay,
as he is overseas in an unnamed country, traveling on horseback.
Okay,
mm-hmm. That's what Pat's up to. You want me to read it in Pat's voice?
Yes, please.
To whom it may concern, it is on this day, the 19th of November, that one Nicholas Pivetta hath declined his qualifying offer. It shall not be omitted that Craig Breslow and company will likely now be more apt to dip the quill in ink to sign a contract for a man with a qualifying offer attached due to the extra compensatory pick from Nicholas. I bid Nicholas adieu, and I am yearning for a new addition to the rotation. Forever yours, Dr. Patrick Brown.
That's how Pat sounds every episode? Have I just not been paying attention?
That's how he talks.
Joe, are you kidding?
That is news to me.
He's always like, oh yes, I doth love physical therapy.
Yeah, come on, Joe. Are you kidding? You're always listening.
Physical. I gotta pay attention more. What am I gonna say?
Yeah, God. So that's what Pat sent via his carrier pigeon. He has a whole fleet of them.
Appreciate it, Dr. P. Thank you so much, sir.
He's doing this this old English phase. Just off camera, of course, but we're kind of just playing along with it because that's how he talks.
Yeah, of course. But he brings up a good point, and it's a great segue to what I want to get into next. It's, you know, I've been personally kind of like maybe holding back a little bit is the right way to put it on what I would want to see them do if Pivetta declined the qualifying offer, because I thought I would sort of jinx myself or jinx him into accepting it or something. I didn't want to go there as much, but he's declined it now. The Red Sox have, you know, they're up a draft pick. As I said before, they could sign one guy and they're even draft picks. If they could sign two guys and they're now down one. The reason I was a little bit skittish, I want to get into the rotation. I want to get into potentially a bat here, but I'll start with Teoscar Hernandez. The reason I was skittish on the Red Sox signing Teoscar before was to do that and to sign a starting pitcher, likely one with a qualifying offer, though I guess not certain because Blake Snell doesn't have one. But if they wanted to sign Max Fried and Teoscar Hernandez, guess what? You're sacrificing your second and third best draft picks to do that. But now that Nick Pivetta's gone and he's declined the qualifying offer, you can sign both of those two guys with qualifying offers, and you're down one. So I think to me, it opens the door much wider for a guy like Teoscar Hernandez because you can do that and address the needs at the top of your rotation. So it's something I'm going to be watching, even though insiders have been saying that the Dodgers should be seen as the favorites. My eyes will be a little bit more on Teoscar. I'm much more open to that now than I was before.
Yeah, it kind of puts them at a net zero if you sign a guy like him in terms of draft picks. I think Teoscar, fit-wise, might be the best right-handed free agent out there. It's a simple fit. You just kind of plug him into that DH corner outfield role. But then, like you said, the Dodgers are in on him, which is like the kiss of death, it feels, in free agency. They get who they want. I don't know. It's good. I'm trying not to get, you know, too high, too low. It's tough to get a feel for Craig Breslow. I think this is a good sign for sure. Last year, it kind of felt like he was shooting from the hip at times, but this is a step in the right direction. I think that I don't know if this changes the odds of them signing one of the big starting pitchers who has a qualifying offer attached, just because if you're already dealing in that, you know, echelon of money and assets, I don't think a draft pick is going to change too much. But with guys like Teoscar, like you mentioned, who are second or third tier of free agent, wherever you want to put them, I think then it starts to make a difference because, you know, the grand scheme of things is much more micro. So maybe we'll see. I really hope they go after Teoscar with an earnest effort and don't do what you did last year. What did they offered him? Gave him just an insulting
2 years, 28.
Fact that they're so lucky that he's loves Fenway Park and apparently wants to play for the Reds.
Yeah, they don't deserve this, dude.
I mean, they fucked it up so bad last offseason. He was begging it, and I'm glad they signed Tyler O'Neill or traded for Tyler O'Neill.
They wanted both. Teoscar stuff happened after they had O'Neill. They could have had both.
They could have had both, but you know, like the right-handed bat spot was taken by Tyler O'Neill, and it could have been worse. I don't know. Also, kind of try to put the pieces together. What would that roster have been like? I guess just less Ref Snyder.
It would have been a little bit tougher to get Willier at bats, but he would have eventually still gotten them with the injuries.
I don't think he would have gotten 399 of them and won the gold glove. Maybe a blessing in disguise, we could call it, if we're really coping right now.
I don't know, dude. That draft pick.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Definitely not. They totally fucked it up last year. They lowballed him. And the fact that he's willing to listen this time around. Good character on that guy. No hard feelings. Teoscar.
He's just a happy-go-lucky guy.
They're going to make him, he's going to fly into Boston. They're going to make him call an Uber and he's going to be like, all right, you know what? No shot.
You bring up a good point though, about the second and third tier free agents, just because my take on the qualifying offer thing, I take those picks seriously. I know a lot of people want to say, fuck the draft picks. Who gives a shit? I take them seriously. And if you want to have a consistent line of success, you need to be able to not just have prospects that you bring up to the big leagues, but prospects that you use as trade capital. So when you give up those picks, you can't give them up willy-nilly. Like, I'll always criticize what the Giants did last year. Signing Blake Snell and giving up a pick for 1 year of him is ridiculous. Giving up a pick, they kind of canceled out Chapman by extending him after, but originally it was giving up a pick for 1 year of him too. I thought that was batshit crazy. So the way you can kind of, with the qualifying offer, I'm fine giving up draft picks for elite guys that you can build your roster around. Guys like Corbin Burns, Max Fried, Juan Soto, those guys represent dudes that you can build your roster around, build your pitching staff and lineup around. I'm fine giving up the pick and the market value contract for those guys. For a guy like Teoscar, who you're probably hoping to keep to a three-year deal, maybe 3 years around $55 to $65 million, I don't know, somewhere in that range, it's a little bit tougher for me to be okay giving up a pick there. But because you read the market right with Pivetta, because you did your job there and you did it well, it opens the door to be fine giving up a pick in the right situation for the right deal for a guy like that, it doesn't have to be two guys. It doesn't have to be Juan Soto and Max Fried. It can be Max Fried and Teoscar Hernandez. You're only going down one pick. It opens up so many doors. It's just so funny because I thought this path was only going to be possible if they gave the qualifying offer to O'Neill. Gave it to Pivetta and it worked.
It's a lot more palatable too to give up a draft pick when you're in a spot where you believe you're going to contend. So like, for, use the Blake Snell example. You thought it was weird when the Giants did it, and I agree with you because it didn't seem like they were. If you just look at the roster, it didn't seem like they were contending with teams like the Padres or the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks, who represented the National League in the World Series the year before. It just didn't seem like that was realistic. But if you're the Red Sox and you feel like you are in a spot to spend a lot of money, you're going to compete a one-year deal for a guy that can help you win maybe the World Series if you're good. That makes sense. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but just the concept of that, I think that makes sense. So the Red Sox are not, they're in a much better place, I think, if you want to put a bow on the what this Nick Pivetta situation means. It wouldn't have been the end of the world if he accepted it, but it's much better that he declined it. Yes. They have now much more financial flexibility. They have an open spot in the rotation. There's no pressure to move a starting pitcher to make someone fit. Not that there ever is. You can never have enough pitching. And I just think the path to improve is much more clear. You can see it clearly now. Spots open. Not for an in-house guy. They're going to bring in someone talented, whether it's Garrett Crochet in a trade or a free agent signing. That's going to happen, and they can lose a draft pick, and it will feel like a net zero because that's what it is.
Let's talk a little bit about it, about how we want to fill out this rotation, how we want it to look, because I'll just get right into it. There was a report from Robert Murray on his stream on Monday that the Red Sox have talked to the representation of Shane Bieber, former Cy Young winner, coming off Tommy John surgery, not just coming off of it. He's going to be out probably, like they'll say till June, but it could be an all-star break situation. Like, we'll see. And that's so interesting to me because we have talked so frequently about how the Red Sox have lacked pitching depth. And I think with the news of Cooper Criswell having another option, having him and Hunter Dobbins and Quinn Priester and Richard Fitz as your depth starters in AAA, like you've got good depth, but you could have great depth if you sign Shane Bieber. He's your sixth starter. So like, let's say they trade for Garrett Crochet and sign Shane Bieber. Oh. Or if they sign Max Fried and get Shane Bieber. Or if they wanted to trade Cutter in the Crochet deal, get Crochet, sign Fried, and get Shane Bieber. You have a lot of pitching depth there. And I think it would be huge to either, you know, fill in for guys who are hurt or take over for guys for like 2 weeks at a time and, you know, give guys rest, because if they're going to want to make a deep run in October, you need guys fresh.
Mm-hmm. That also, you lose all that pressure at the trade deadline. If the Red Sox are looking to improve, don't have to worry about it. That's people always roll their eyes like, oh, Trevor Story's hurt. He's going to come back. That's going to be the trade deadline acquisition. This would be the rare case where I would be okay with that kind of speak. Shane Bieber's the trade deadline acquisition if he comes back around that time. That makes sense. Can you imagine the Red Sox get, we'll use Crochet, your example. They get Crochet. You have Crochet. Now you have Houck. Brian Bayo, I expect to take a step forward. Lucas Giolito is coming back. Cutter Crawford has improved every year. And then your depth is Priester, Fitz, and Criswell. Dude, then you add Shane Bieber to that. You all of a sudden have one of the better rotations in Major League Baseball. That is a nightmare to meet in the playoffs if you're an opposing team. Can you imagine? So I love the Shane Bieber idea. It's the perfect buy low, kind of sign low, whatever you want to call it, scenario. I'm full steam ahead with that. I think that's a great idea.
So the other thing with Bieber is the Red Sox are pretty well renowned with their medical staff. Their medical staff is known as one of, if not the best in the sport. I tweeted this yesterday. You look back at guys like Liam Hendricks and James Paxton, who signed here while injured. You can also look at Michael Fulmer, who we'll get into that. The Red Sox just left unprotected in the Rule 5 draft for the Rule 5 draft, so he could get snatched up by another team. But he signed a minor league deal with the Red Sox to rehab with their staff. Players who are hurt target this team to help them recover. It's well documented. I remember, oh God, who was it? It might have been Matt Strom. Yeah, Matt Strom said that he signed with the Red Sox after the Padres because he heard about how great their medical staff was.
Good recall. Yeah, it's a good point. And then we have our recent examples with Hendricks, Fulmer. So Bieber. I love that idea. I think
Let's list it out. Dream a little bit. Ready? Okay.
All right. It's the same. Okay. I want to use Crochet again. I just went down the list, but let's solidify. Opening day starter. I'm giving that to Tanner Houck out of respect for what he did last year. So he's the number one. He's starting on opening day. Maybe he's not your best.
So they didn't sign like Max Fried or anything. Because if they sign Fried or Snell or Burns, that guy's got to get opening day.
No, I'm giving it to Houck either way. I'm giving it to him. He's been here. He did it.
All right.
Second game. It is Garrett Crochet in a trade. I think there's too many. Roll your eyes all you want. Too many left-handed bats. There's a lot of good middle infield talent too. I'm sure the White Sox and their historically bad team would like to recoup some young talent for Crochet before he's on an expiring deal in 2026. So trade him ahead of 2025 while he's got more value. Red Sox get him. He is probably your best pitcher, but he's going to start game two. Game three, Brian Bello. Don't really need to explain that. Game four, I am going to go... Give it a Cutter Crawford. You're probably the fifth best guy, but you were there last year, and it gives Lucas Giolito one extra day of rest after his year off. He can't understate the value of that one extra day. I'm joking, to be clear, everyone. I'm not crazy. And then you have Giolito the fifth. And then season goes on. Red Sox like, look, we're looking good. It's the trade deadline. We don't need to acquire anyone. Why is that, Gordo? Why don't they need to acquire anyone?
Ooh, maybe it's because he got a former Cy Young winner in the reins, ready to come back.
Cy Young winner and the brother of pop star Justin Bieber. No, he's not related to Justin Bieber, but he has the same last name, Shane Bieber. That would be fucking incredible. That would be dream scenario for me. You get a starting pitcher, and then not only that, not only are you adding an ace to the top of the rotation, Crochet, Fried, Burns, Snell, whoever you want, you also get a full, you know, half season of seeing what you have with Giolito. Is he the same guy who pitched for the White Sox, who was a, you know, Cy Young vote getter? You get to see if Cutter Crawford takes another step forward. You want to stick with him? Fantastic. Brian Bello, another guy you expect to take a step forward. All these guys get a shot, and then you can reevaluate at the deadline without the stress of wondering, who are we going to bring in? Who's available? You already got a guy, and you know he's a killer. So that's, I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's perfect. And Sammy, one of the great things that it does here is the issue, you can't normally sign or have six legitimate established big league starters. Like, you can't sign, you can't acquire, like, for instance, like Max Fried, Corbin Burns, and Blake Snell, if you wanted to sign them all, they wouldn't all come here without other trades. Like, you're not going to put Tanner Houck in the bullpen. You're not going to put Cutter Crawford in the bullpen. These guys are big league starters. But with Shane Bieber, if you get him, you can get six established big league starters. And that's before you get to your depth. And the reason that's so important, we saw it last year. Like, Cutter started to wear down in June.
Mm-hmm.
Houck started to wear down after the All-Star break. Like, they ended
up
making
it. And Bradfo said it to us when Bradfo was on our episode recently. He was talking about how he heard a lot of chatter from fans and media saying, oh, they need to skip a start for Houck, need to skip a start for Cutter. That doesn't do much. If you have fatigue and
Sammy, what they would do is they would pull them an inning early. They didn't even get to skip the start. The only guy that got a start skip was Pivetta.
Rob mentioned that too. He's like, pull them in. That's not really how
the
impactful
start
is
skipping,
that?
The start skipping is what's impactful. That's what getting the sixth starter would allow you to do, is like fake IL Houck for 15 days.
That's what I mean. That's more than skipping a start, though, is what I'm saying. It's like a fake IL stint. Didn't want to say it, but since we're saying it, like a fake IL stint. That's where, when a guy's like really tired, arm fatigue, you know, it's not it's not, it's a rule bend. Every team does it. So I think it's a great weapon to have in your back pocket. And then on top of that, the minor league depth, which we complained about all last year, there's no upper minors depth. Boom. Now you got Fitz, Priester. I think Criswell. Criswell.
Dobbins. Shit,
that was disrespectful. Criswell was very solid last year. So,
but Sammy, the beauty of it is it also, it gives you another step before you dip into that depth, because like having that depth is nice, but those guys as of today, and like I have high hopes for Quinn Priester, and obviously Richard Fitz showed us a lot in his starts at the end of last season, but it would be nice to be able to like go to a Cy Young winner before you get to that. Or when Bieber comes back, if all six are healthy, then it's like, okay, like you give guys days off until someone gets hurt. And when someone gets hurt, you're not starting a minor leaguer. Like you're giving these guys time. Like Bayo, when he made his debut, like he was rushed into that because we had no pitching depth. He made his debut like 2 months too early.
I agree. I think this is the way. Like you get one
can
of
I
the
give
guys.
You a dream?
Give me a dream.
I'll give you a dream.
Oh, is it the one from last episode?
No, not that dream. This dream's better. This dream's much better. All right,
no,
you ready?
Yeah.
No dog poop involved. All right. So you trade for Garrett Crochet and the deal involves Cutter Crawford.
Oh.
So you also sign Max Fried.
Oh.
And you sign Shane Bieber as the sixth guy. So here's your rotation. Opening day, Max Fried. Second game, Tanner Houck.
Okay, fine.
Max Fried, game one. Tanner Houck, game two. Garrett Crochet, game three. Brian Bayo, game four. Lucas Giolito, game five. Shane Bieber comes back in June. And you go from a year ago questioning whether the Red Sox have a major league rotation to, holy shit, they have one of the best rotations in the sport.
I love it. I just...
It's not realistic.
I don't think that's going to happen. Dude, I mean, if it did, then... You know,
I mean, it's not that crazy. They only really paid big in my scenario right there. They only really paid big money for one guy. But the beauty of your scenario where they don't pay big money is they have money, like a shit ton of money left over to get Vlad in a year, because that's going to be my white whale.
Oh, OK. I was going to say they have money left over to sign a closer and then a right handed bat, but
or to sign Juan Soto.
Or Juan. So, yeah, he's good. Well, Gordy's left handed, dude. Come on.
Yeah. It's true. That's true.
Nah. Yeah, I'm not off the Soto to Boston. I want to believe train. I just feel like he's going back to the Yankees. So we'll see. But I like the dream scenario.
I think he's going to the Mets.
I think maybe. I think realistic dream scenario. Not that yours is completely unrealistic. It could happen.
It's a little crazy.
But realistic. I think it's a trade for Crochet because then you keep that financial flexibility. Then you sign a guy like Bieber, and then you have money left over for Tanner Scott, let's say, and Teoscar. Yep. And now you have that draft pick, so you can do the Teoscar thing and not lose anything. So I'm just excited. I feel like stuff is actually going to happen now. And I am wary that I've said this many times. We all have that we're excited for stuff to happen, yet not much has, but it's early. So I think we can keep being positive and not feel crazy about it.
Yeah. To put a ball in the Bieber thing, the last thing I really like about it is the thing I like about the Lucas Giolito signing. It's what the Mets did this year with Sean Manaea and Luis Severino. You take shots on short-term deals for guys you really like that haven't had the qualifying offer attached to them before. The Mets signed Sean Manaea and Severino to one-year deals. They both just declined the qualifying offer. They're getting draft picks for both those guys. More likely, they're going to use that draft capital to sign big free agents. That's hopefully what's going to happen with Lucas Giolito. Either he has a great year and either the Red Sox can extend him, or if he leaves, the Red Sox get a draft pick. And if they sign Shane Bieber and he does well and it's a short-term deal, because maybe Shane wants to test the market again after he comes to Boston and hit free agency again, then you'd get a draft pick for him too. Signing pitchers to short-term deals that could net draft picks, it's a really good strategy, especially if you want to be in the deep end for free agents, like hopefully the Red Sox will be for years to come, not just this year. Mm-hmm. But to get to the next topic, the final topic of this show was today, as we record, it was the Nick Pivetta qualifying offer decision deadline. It was also the Rule 5 protection deadline. So basically, by the end of the day on Tuesday, by 6 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, the Red Sox had to choose which players... if a player has a certain amount of time in the minor leagues, and it depends whether they were signed internationally, drafted out of high school, or drafted out of college, they have to spend a certain amount of time in the minors. And if they're still in the minors after a certain amount of time, they are susceptible to be picked in the Rule 5 draft, where teams can select the player and they have to stay on the major league roster the entire season. And if not, they get returned. So the Red Sox protected Jostinson Garcia, the password Garcia, and Hunter Dobbins from the Rule 5 draft. The players they left unprotected of note were Michael Fulmer, like the veteran, former Rookie of the Year Michael Fulmer, who they signed to a minor league deal last year. He goes unprotected, so he could get grabbed by a team. I honestly think that he probably will. We'll see. Maybe the Red Sox left him unprotected because his medicals were
former
shit.
All-star.
Yeah, so we'll see there.
I think he'll get taken.
And then Alan Castro, switch hitting prospect. He was eligible last year, didn't get taken, but a little bit further along in the minors. That one's possible. And Yordani Monegro, who is like a reasonable pitching prospect, he has a chance to get taken too, unprotected. And to protect the two guys that they did protect, the Red Sox had to DFA two players. And those two players, it is finally the end of the Brian Mata era. Maybe we'll see if he passes through waivers. He might get claimed. He's still seen as a guy who has good stuff, but we've seen he's never been able to stay healthy. And then Isaiah Campbell, who the Red Sox traded Luis Arias for last year, pitched a little bit at the beginning of the season, was like okay for a couple games, and then absolutely blew up like two games in a row, and we never saw him again. He gets DFA'd as well. So those are the moves, pretty unsubstantial, but any quick takes, Sammy, on those before we get to enough said?
Whatever. I mean, Brian Mata, 3 years ago, maybe I would have been excited about him, but you, like you said, he can't stay healthy. The work ethic is questionable, to put it lightly. He's almost never in shape. I saw you tweeted a picture of him a few minutes ago. Didn't look good in that picture either. So I'm just whatever, man. I don't have much patience for guys who you constantly hear about the work ethic isn't fantastic. I know he's talented, throws complete heat, but just not working. And then Isaiah Campbell, whatever.
I had higher hopes for Campbell last year. If you recall back when we asked me, you, and Pat before opening day, which of the relievers out of Isaiah Campbell, Greg Weiser, and Justin Slayton, which of those guys was going to be the most impactful arm for the Red Sox last year? All three of us said it was going to be Campbell.
Did we really?
We all did. All three of us did.
Were we drunk?
Nah, dude. Stone cold sober, man. Sober ass takes. And we were dead wrong, man. It was very much Justin Slayton.
maybe we got drugged. Too, but someone drugged us. That's how I'm gonna go with that. Isaac. I mean, he just throws looping curveballs in the top of the strike zone. It's like, come on, what do you expect, man? Fastball. His fastball is directly down the middle every time. I remember, our fave account, Red Sox Stats, had the graph of the strike zone, and Isaiah Campbell's fastball right down the middle, right down the middle, right down the middle. High curveball, fastball right down the middle. It's not going to play. It didn't play. He's gone. I won't lose any sleep.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, obviously they could pass through waivers and sign back with the Red Sox on a minor or get outrighted to off the roster and stay in the organization. We'll see. I don't know. I don't really have a read yet on what I think is going to happen there. I don't know. I both guys are on pretty much like the borderline of like maybe a bad team with plenty of open roster spots and doesn't plan on spending a lot of money takes a shot, but it's tough to say at this point. And then as for the guys getting added, the password, Jostinson Garcia, you're not going to see him this year in all likelihood, but I mean, he's a good prospect. Someone that the Red Sox or that has been floated around in trade conversations, at least in the media. I don't know if the Red Sox have done that, but that was a guy that we had in our Who Says No for Garrett Crochet. And as for Dobbins, solid minor league pitching depth, throws hard, added a splinker, like the splitter sinker thing this year, had good results. So he's going to be solid pitching depth for the Red Sox. I'm sure you'll see him at some point next year when they need a spot start. We'll see. Depends on what they do in the offseason. But everything pretty unsubstantial there. I don't know if it's really worth talking about too much.
Nah.
Any enough said for me before we get out of here? I've got one, if you don't.
Well, let me hear yours.
Marino Pepin.
Oh. Well, we're going there?
We got to. Oh. Got to go there. Got to go there.
Go off. Go off, King.
This guy. This guy.
You're like, this is funny. Gordo, you're like one of the nicest people I know. And you like, I don't like this guy. You don't like him. He wronged you a little. And he called you a parrot.
He called me a parrot. See, I already, for years, I didn't like the guy because he would dupe Red Sox fans. Like, he duped Red Sox fans into thinking that they were about to sign Xander Bogaerts. He told Red Sox fans that the Red Sox had offered $300 million to Yoshinobu Yamamoto last year. And then 2 days later, Jeff Passan tweeted that no offers had been made. And so anyone reporting offers, that's inaccurate. He had reported that the Red Sox were trying to trade Roman Anthony and Seidon Rafaela for a half a year of Blake Snell. That wasn't true. This time around, he says they're going to make the he said they're going to make the highest offer in franchise history to Juan Soto, which is going to be true. I could also report that and tell you, hey, breaking news from Gordo, Red Sox plan to offer Juan Soto the highest contract offer in franchise history, and I'm not going to be wrong. Like, it's a fair assumption. And it's something that Alex Speer wrote in his piece last week.
I hear the fucking sun is going to rise tomorrow, too.
Exactly.
Quote me on that one.
So, he called me a parrot. I guess.
Gordo, can I jump in? You know what the issue is? We're friends with a lot of these media members after last year. You know, we spoke to them a lot of good people. They make mistakes. They get stuff wrong. That's okay. But you have to come clean. When you make a mistake and you push the blame elsewhere, or you just look the other way, that's not good. That's not professional journalism. And then, on top of that, when you get called out on it by someone like young Gordon here, and then you clap back as if you've been wronged, it just doesn't sit well with me, and it clearly doesn't sit well with you. And you had the receipts.
Yeah, he called me a parrot, and I quote tweeted him with a bunch of receipts of him getting stuff wrong. And you're right, Sammy. So much of it is about owning up. Like, when John Morosi got the Shohei Ohtani thing wrong, like, he was practically in tears about that, and he owned up to it. And yeah, I mean, we've been able to move on from it with him. The other thing with him is he gets shit right all the time. It's a one-off. It's a one-off when he misses on the Shohei report. Whereas Marino Pepin has never been right about anything, ever. The only stuff he's ever been, quote unquote, right about is stuff that he saw elsewhere and then played off as if it was his own. So, yeah, not a fan of his. He tries to dunk on me every chance he gets. When Sean McAdam a couple weeks ago reported that the Red Sox did have a $300 million offer for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Joe, I'm glad you brought this picture up here. When McAdam reported that, Pepin, I tweeted out that McAdam reported that, and Pepin found my tweet and try to dunk on me, be like, see, I told you a year ago that they offered it. But if you're watching on YouTube, as you can see here, Marino Pepin tweeted that they offered him $300 million, and that's on December 16th. Jeff Passan on December 18th said, inaccurate if anyone's saying that there's offers. So I'm not going to say whether or not, like, Pepin knows people, whatever. He's, like, been doing this, like, tweeting about baseball, tweeting about the Red Sox for a while now. But I'm just telling you, if you see his tweet and he says that the Red Sox are close to signing Juan Soto, don't believe it if it's coming from him. That's what I have to say about it. If he wants to come on this podcast and hash it out, by all means, be my guest.
Yes. Open invite. A friendly open invite. We'll all be friendly after, but we got to talk about it. All said, Gordo, I thought that was a very diplomatic way to put it. You were kind of put in a bad spot by this gentleman. You know, we don't know him personally. Maybe he's a great guy. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. Maybe it wasn't. But at the end of the day, when you make a mistake in anything in life, just be accountable.
Yep.
My enough said, the Celtics' new jerseys are awful. That's it.
Yeah, I don't love them. They look better on the players playing the game than they did in the pictures, but I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, that's fair. Yep. Good
Joe, did you say...
Good friend of mine said, if they wear these jerseys one time, it's one time too many. And I thought that was funny. And I agree. But they also won the game that they wore them in, right? Was that Tatum's buzzer beater game? Okay. So maybe they got some, maybe they're so disgusted by the uniforms that they're like, oh my God, we got to win this game quick so we could take these gross things off.
Oh my God. Joe, before we.
I know what you're going to share. So go. You can share it before.
I pull up Twitter and it's a DM from someone who sent me a tweet from Marino Pepin. It says, "Alo te Oscar." So now that's where we're going with this guy. I'm just telling you right now. I'm not saying the Red Sox aren't going to sign Teoscar. I'm not saying that if Marino Pepin says the Red Sox will sign Teoscar, that they won't sign Teoscar.
No, but it's like me telling you just got a scoop. The Red Sox are going to try to add a new pitcher. No fucking shit, dude. We all know that. We know they're going to talk to Teoscar Hernandez. That's not a scoop.
Exactly.
Stop acting
exactly.
Like it's a scoop. That's annoying. Anyway, we got
to. If they sign Teoscar, do not attribute it to him. He doesn't get the credit. The guy who gets the report for real gets the credit. Joe, I'll give you the final word here.
Real quick, what do you guys think about the new Hall of Fame list, and why should Dustin Pedroia be the headliner?
Dustin Pedroia better get in someday. I don't think he will. I just hope he stays on the ballot long enough, because he could be one of those guys where it ages well. Like, some guys have pretty low vote totals early on and then still get in. I hope he's one of those guys. Just stay on the ballot for now. I was looking at the list, and usually I'm the type of guy that has 10 Hall of Famers every single time. I only came out with 7, but I'm willing to be convinced on a couple, so I haven't talked about it yet. But put Manny Ramirez in the Hall of Fame. It'll never happen, but please do
it. I think Pedroia deserves to get in based on grit alone, and I hope Billy Wagner gets in because he retired early to hang out with his kids, and I think that's a wonderful thing to do, and I hope he still gets in.
Yep, I think he will. Final last year chance for Billy Wagner. Yep, last chance.
Last chance. Hope he gets it. Former Red Sox.
Former Red Sox. Red Sox legend, as you like to say, Sammy.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yep. All right, that's all the time we got today for Play Tessie episode 153. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Before you go about your day, tune into something else. Go back to work, whatever you're doing. Get out of your car. Hit the subscribe button. Please subscribe. Rate 5 stars wherever you're getting your podcasts. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel. You can find our Play Tessie playlist there where it's got all of our episodes. You can hit the thumbs up on the videos, and we really appreciate it. Find us on the socials. We've been posting tons of great content there lately from our interviews with both Rob Bradford and Ian Brown, getting some really, really good insights there. You can go back and listen to those episodes too if you want. They're on the feeds, but we got some clips from those interviews. We've got quote cards. It's all on the socials. So those are at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Joe in the back, for Larry the cat, who is not feeling well today, appreciate you guys tuning into this one. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.